Okay, now go and give them first. Anybody who's up there. There's Maharaj here. Maharaj is here.
He's going to speak first. Oh.
Yeah, I'm going to say something.
Hare Krishna.
Hare
Krishna. Oh, Giriraj Govardhan ki.
Jai.
Oh, Giriraj Dharan ki.
Jai.
Oh, Premanandi.
Hare Hare Bo.
We offer you a warm welcome back to ISKCON Bhaktivedanta Ashram, where the curtain never closes. We thank you for coming. We're expecting a lot more devotees, but you know how things are. Hare Krishna. I'd first of all like to thank, you know, my God brothers for coming, visiting sannyasis, and all the devotees. I'd also like to give some special thanks. The first special thanks I'd like to offer is to posthumously to Srila Tamalkrishna Goswami Maharaj and Giriraj Maharaj, who had the foresight to think to get this property before anybody was thinking like this to get this property. I'd like to offer special thanks to His Holiness Bhakti Gaurav Gauranarayan Maharaj, who was sent here when there was nothing. It was a derelict building. There were no doors, no windows, no floors, no electricity, no water, nothing, except of course the mercy of Giriraj Govardhan, which is everything. But anyway, and he stayed here for some time under extremely austere circumstances by himself or with one or two other devotees in order to secure the place. And then I'd like to offer an extra special thanks to our general manager, Asit Krishna Prabhu, who also joined Gauranarayan Maharaj very soon after he came here. And I want to tell you a very short story. It won't take very long. Many devotees who come here, they say they experience a charming or almost like a magical atmosphere in this ashram. Even different than when you, because this is a magical atmosphere. Govardhan is the most magical atmosphere available. But many devotees have told me that when they come into this property, it's something special. And I have no scriptural kind of like evidence, but I have a story to tell that can help us to understand why that is. Asit Krishna has been a devotee his whole life. And when he was 7 years old, he went in front of his family during the reunion and made a vow spontaneously in front of everyone that he was going to give his life without conditions to Krishna, 7 years old. And from that day, he started having dreams. Krishna started coming to him regularly in dreams. And in one of those dreams, Krishna took him by the hand and took him on a long walk. He said it seemed like they were walking forever. And they came to a place, and Krishna put a seat there. He had his beads, and he was chanting in the dream. And Krishna went, he left, and he said, "I'll come back, you stay here and chant." But he never came back. And in the dream, he was feeling an intense separation from Krishna to the point where he was beginning to lose his breathing, and he thought he was going to expire in the dream, and then he woke up. So it made a huge impression on him, that place. And many, many years later, when Asit came to join Bhakti Gaurav Narayan Maharaj here, he went across the road to pay his obeisances to the hill, and he saw the place where Krishna had put him. This is no joke. This is a real story. I didn't exaggerate. I told it exactly like it is. So anybody who thinks that, you know, there's no pure devotees in ISKCON or that this or that, whatever everybody's thinking nowadays, they have another think coming. Because there are many exalted devotees in this movement. And in particular, I meant to make the point that Krishna knew about this place before And I was very fortunate to be in the room in 1977 when Srila Prabhupada asked us to take him to Govardhan. And it didn't work out in exactly the way we thought it would. But when we brought the murti of Srila Prabhupada here, this, to the temple room, and when he came into the temple room and we began to worship him, I got this also very strong feeling that this is a special place. It's some place that Srila Prabhupada wanted to be. And that so for all these reasons, what to speak of the fact that it was here 125 years ago, and who knows, the devotees who are good enough devotees to have made this to be their bhajan kirtir, they associate together, they know one another. And who knows who stayed here? Special personality. Who knows? So we have this magical atmosphere. We welcome you now, and we welcome you in the future. Please consider this to be your home, away from home. And without further ado, I will turn our program over. The program is very simple. Everybody who's been here before knows. We have lecture. We have kirtan. We go down and worship the cows in the garden. We go out to Govardhan. We worship the hill and have Mahabhishek, have more kirtan. We come back and we take a feast. That's our program. It's very, very simple, but it's extremely sublime. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
And of course, the last person we have to thank, especially, is Srimati Radharani. Because Srimati Radharani, when Krishna first asked her to come here with him to this material world, she refused on the grounds that the Yamuna was not there, and Giri Govardhan was not there, and Vrindavan was not there. So Krishna arranged for Braj Dham to come here, and the Yamuna to come here, and Giri Govardhan to come here to satisfy her so she would come. So he's here as a result of that pastime. So we ultimately thank Srimati Radharani. So without further ado, I will turn the mic over to Gopi Pranda Prabhu, who will enlighten us. And Burjan Prabhu also is going to speak or read or whatever he decides to do. And we'll meet up later on. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
There you go. Srila Prabhupada. Ki
Jai.
Gaur Premanandi.
Hare Hare Prabhu.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gidivana Dari
Gopiyana Balava Gidivana Dari
Gopiyana Balava Gidivana Dari Rajana Ranjana
Yashoda Nandana
Rajana Ranjana
Yashoda Nandana
Yamuna Tiramana Chahari Ravanachari
Ravanachari
Jai Radha Madhava Rama Kunya Vihari Madhava Kunja Vihari
Jaya Madhava Kunja Vihari
Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivradikacharya Ashtotara Shatashi Shiman Śrīla Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON DDT Samsthapaka Acharya Śrīla Prabhupada Ki Jai Kṛtara Śrīmad Bhāgavatam Ki Jai Śrī Govardhan Puja Maha Mahotsav Ki Jai All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to Sri Sri Guru Nanak. Sarva Shastra Vipiyusha Sarva Vedaika Satpala Sarva Siddhantaratnadya Sarva Lokaika Drikpada Sarva Bhagavata Prana Srimad Bhagavata Prabhu Kalidvanto Ditaritya Sri Krishna Parivartito Paramananda Pattaya Prema Varshat Shadayate Sarvada Sarva Sevyaya Sri Krishnaya Namostuve Marika Mando Matsangin Madhuro Madhmadana Mandistadaka Madhbhagya Madhananda Namostute Asadu Saduta Dain Atini Chochata Kara Adamuncha Kadachin Mam Pemnarit Kantayok Spura Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Okay, reading one verse from 10th Canto, Chapter 27, Text Number 20 Tvam Nat Paramakam Daivam Tvam Na Indro Jagatpate Bhavaya Bhavago Vipra Devanam Ye Chasadavaha Tvam Nat Paramakam Daivam Tvam Na Indro Jagatpate Bhavaya Bhavago Vipra Devanam Ye Chasadavaha This is spoken by Mother Surabhi, mother of all the cows, who came together with Indra after Krishna defeated Indra's attempt to destroy Vajradam. Indra came to apologize and he asked Surabhi to come with him. And she spoke these words to Krishna. You are our worshipable deity. Therefore, O Lord of the universe, for the benefit of the cows, the brahmanas, the demigods, and all other saintly persons, please become our Indra. Purport. Please become our Indra. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Supreme Lord is self-sufficient. He can do everything himself. The Lord appointed one of his innumerable children to the position of Indra, the Lord of the cosmic heaven. But Indra abused his authority. And now Srinivi requests Lord Krishna, the absolute truth, to directly become her Lord, her Indra. We should carefully perform our duties without false pride, and we will not become obsolete and embarrassed, as in the present case of King Indra, who is obsolete and embarrassed. King Indra, who actually attacked Lord Krishna and his Vrindavan devotees. We should try, okay, let's try to understand this leela. Krishna performs so many different leelas in this area on and around Govardhan Hill. Krishna is manifesting his relationships with all different kinds of devotees, and there's countless pastimes that he enjoys with those devotees here. But of course, the most famous one is Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill. And major antagonist in that drama is Indra. Now let's try to understand what's happening between Krishna's servant Indra and Krishna, and what it has to do with the hill, another servant of Krishna. You can look at this various ways. They're both servants, so there's nothing extraordinary happening. They're both serving Krishna. You can also look at it that Indra is acting like a demon, and therefore he has to be defeated, if not destroyed. But it's actually more complex than that. When Krishna advised Nanda Maharaj and the other senior cowherd men to put aside their regular tradition of worshipping Indra by this great yajna, that which they would do every year, when Krishna told them to put that aside, that was quite a serious matter. We have to understand what is considered important in Indian culture. What do Indians consider important? And the answer is power. If a man is a VIP, then everybody respects him, no matter what character he has, good or bad. If he has power, then he's important, in the view of Indian culture. Look at Indra. He is not just some government minister. Just like when I was living in Vrindavan, the chief minister of Uttar Pradesh came to visit the Bonki Bihari temple, and he flew in his helicopter, and they made the land part of the property of the college across the street from our temple, made it into an impromptu helicopter landing place. Such a big commotion that the big man is coming. They brought out, just in case the helicopter crashed, they brought out the fire engine, which I never saw. They had a fire engine in Vrindavan. Great event. A big, important man is coming. So Indra is a much more important man than even the chief minister of Uttar Pradesh. He is the ruler, the chief of all the demigods. And the demigods control everything in the universe, and he controls them. This is about as important as you can get. And so this sacrifice was meant for Indra, not for for the biggest VIP. And from the Indian point of view is that you don't cross an important man. You give him his puja. But Krishna advised, no. Let's worship the Brahmins and Govardhan Hill and the cows instead. This was quite radical. Against the normal, practically, from Indian viewpoint, this is asocial. Against standards of civilization to not honor the powerful man, and instead, divert this worship to cows,
The Brahmins?
To some hill. Okay, the gopis call Govardhan Horidasa Varya. They think that Govardhan is the greatest of all of Krishna's servants. And servant doesn't just mean only those in Dasya Rasa. The basic quality of being Krishna's servant, of course, it is primarily prominent in Dasya Rasa, because that is what it is. The rasa of servitude means to be Krishna's servant. But the higher rasas all include the same element of service. So the more intimate devotees are also Krishna's servants, and then something more in addition to that. And the gopis are saying that they're calling Giriraj, they're calling him Haridasa Varya, the best of all the servants of Lord Hari. And they enumerate the reasons why. Because he provides nicely for the cows and for Krishna's friends and for Krishna. So the cows can eat nice grass and drink nice water. So there's nice shade under trees and in caves for the friends of Krishna to play with him, and so on. It doesn't seem that Govardhan is doing some nice service. He's providing some nice facilities, but it doesn't seem to be exhibiting any power. He's not controlling anybody. He's not even doing anything active, except for growing some grass and providing some water and some caves. It doesn't seem to be someone who can compare with the Lord of the universe. But Krishna intended, Krishna arranged this whole Leela to teach a few lessons. And Indra was one of those who had to learn the lesson. He's coming now with Mother Surabhi to offer his apologies. Not just pro forma, not just because Krishna has shown himself to be even more powerful, and therefore in the pecking order of universal government, therefore Indra is obliged to submit to Krishna because he's the more powerful person. Not just that. Indra is now remembering his true relationship with Krishna. And therefore, he's not only acting to save his career and, you know, submitting to the more powerful person as a matter of a political necessity. He's deeply embarrassed. He's feeling, Prabhupada says, obsolete and embarrassed. Obsolete. You know, who needs me anymore? Krishna can do everything by himself. He can defeat and take over the jobs of all the demigods all by himself, even though he's so far only 7 years old. So Indra is honestly surrendering to Krishna, and he's so ashamed of himself that he's afraid to go by himself to talk to Krishna. He asks Surabhi, to whom Krishna is very kind, mother of the cows. Krishna may be angry at himself, and he's afraid to approach Krishna, but he's calculating that he's not going to be angry at Mother Surabhi. She didn't commit any offense. And Krishna's not going to get angry at a cow. So let her go and do most of the talking, and I'll just beg my apologies. She's talking now. She's saying, Krishna, you are our Indra. Whatever other person is given this position temporarily, you are the real Lord of the whole universe. And as far as we're concerned, us cows, you are our Indra. Later on, I think Shukadev uses the phrase Indra Govam. He's the Indra of the cows. You can turn that backwards and it becomes Govindra or Govinda. And in this ceremony of the Abhishek that is going to be performed in this chapter, by Indra, Surabhi, and all the demigods headed by Brahma, they're going to... What does Abhishek mean? We do Abhishek for the deities, but what does it mean? Abhishek ceremony is the coronation of a king. You sprinkle the king with oil. They even do that in Europe. There's some sprinkling of oil. Anointment. The word Christos, Christ, means the person who's been anointed, king. He must be king of the Jews. And he's called Christ because he was anointed. The Abhishek was done. Oil was poured on his head. And that made him the king. So now they're going to do the same thing for Krishna. Down the hill, down a bit the hill here at Govindakund is the place where this Abhisheka was performed by Brahma, Indra, and all the demigods. In order to recognize that Krishna is the actual king of heaven. And Sukadeva says that this is when Krishna got the name Govinda, which means the Indra of the cows. Of course, the name is eternal, but the pastime is here, that this is when he got the name. There's this peculiar relationship between Krishna and Indra that's an important element in this drama. Indra is not just an atheist or a demon. He has a very close personal relationship with Krishna, at least in his other avatar, as Lord Vamanadeva. Vamanadeva takes birth as the younger brother of Indra, Upendra, the one who was born after Indra, from the same mother. They're brothers. And Krishna's the younger brother. Indra is got this idea in his head that Krishna is the same Vamana. He's my younger brother. And therefore, there's this sibling rivalry, or Indra expects to be treated like the older brother, to be respected. It's not some fight between an atheist or a demon and Krishna, but between, it's a sibling rivalry between the younger brother and the older brother. There's a narration in the Hari Vamsha which illustrates this. Later on, Indra is chastised now, and Krishna is going to tell him, no problem, go back to your position. Rule as Indra, but don't become proud like this again. And Indra tried very hard to follow that advice and to be a humble servant of Krishna, but still, he's got this mentality that he's Krishna's older brother. So later on, when Krishna was a great prince in Dwarka, and Narada gave Rukmini, right, one Parijata flower from heavenly planets. Narada, you come from Jagannath Puri or Sri Rangam and you bring the other devotees some prasadam. So Narada brought from Swargaloka one Parijata flower that is not available on the earth and gave it to Krishna. What are you going to do? Who are you going to give it to? 16,000 queens. You can't cut it up into 16,000 people. He gave the one flower to the one chief prince, Rukmini, Narada. And Krishna's second queen, Satyabhama, who has something of a fiery nature, she became jealous. She told Krishna, I want one too. Why does she only get one? Parijata flower. So she insisted to Krishna that you must somehow get me one flower. Krishna promised her, not only one flower, I'll give you the whole tree. I'll give you one whole tree, and you can plant it in your garden. Having promised his wife to do this, Krishna had to go and try to do it. And he went to his, who's actually, you know, in the other avatar, in his form as Vamana, Krishna is the younger brother. So he approached Indra and requested him. You know, my wife has asked me to bring that tree. Can you give it to me? And then Indra answered in the mood of the older brother and politely chastised Krishna. He said, I would if I could. This is basically what's told in the Hari Vamsha. But Lord Brahma has made the law that there are certain species of life that have to stay in certain places. There are five kinds of trees that are only allowed to grow on the Swargaloka. and are not allowed to be imported to the earth, and this is one of them. By the law established by Lord Brahma, you may not take this. It's not allowed to bring this down to earth. So I'll have to refuse, Krishna. In any way, I think maybe you're being too controlled by your wives. You know, that they're forcing you to do such embarrassing things and ask me to break the law. So I'm sorry, Krishna, I can't do it. This is how it's described in the Harivamsa. And then the fight ensued. Then Krishna went ahead and fought to stole the flower, and there was a fight. Stole the tree. But Indra has that relationship with Krishna. It's not actual enmity. It's not that Indra is a complete materialist, but he's got an attitude that he's superior to Krishna because Krishna is his younger brother. Krishna defeats him. Krishna elsewhere defeats or at least subdues all the demigods. Some of them submit voluntarily, some of them put up a fight, but Krishna makes all of them submit to his supremacy. By the time he grows up and is ready to go to Mathura, every single demigod has submitted to him. And he's actually claimed the position of the lord of all the lords. The one devotee, one servant, Indra, has completely embarrassed himself and even made himself obsolete. That means he's invalidated his right to service. He's actually spoiled his opportunity to be Krishna's servant. It's only his good fortune that Krishna gives it back to him out of his graciousness. He tells him, okay, you can remain, really, by all justice, you should give up your position, but I'm giving it back to you. You can remain as Indra, and by my grace, you can rule. So Indra has completely disgraced himself by daring to oppose what Krishna's desire, what gives Krishna pleasure. And contrasted to him is Govardhan, who's the passive participant in this pastime. He's not doing anything except for getting lifted and taking the worship, receiving the worship. He's not saying anything. He's not, you know, appearing in some demigod form and talking. But he's actually the hero of the drama. The whole worship is given to him. Krishna is directing that this devotee is worshipable. Indra expects worship. Everyone expects that. Indra is the important man, the powerful man, the most powerful demigod in heaven, in the universe. And that the worship should go to him. In the Rig Veda, there are 150 or more different demigods, deities, that are offered various kinds of worship in the Rig Veda. But you can count it. A good, close to half of all the prayers and worship are addressed to Indra. He receives most of the Vedic worship in the sacrifices. He's the prominent person receiving worship in the Vedic sacrifices. But Krishna is showing, to the contrary, that if Indra is going to be jealous and non-cooperative, then he doesn't deserve the worship. Let the worship go to Govardhan Hill instead. Because that's Krishna's choice. Therefore, Krishna's devotees agree with him that Govardhan is supremely worshipable. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came here, he walked down the same Parikram Marg. It wasn't paved. There weren't trucks and buses running down it. It was not much of a crowd either 500 years ago when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came here, but he personally did the Govardhan Parikrama. He embraced the hills of the rocks of Govardhan. He was so respectful, worshipable in his attitude toward Govardhan that he resolved not to step his foot on Govardhan, to put his head on Govardhan, but not to put his feet. And therefore, All the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu take this same vow to avoid stepping on Govardhan. Other devotees don't. Devotees who are not followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they walk on Govardhan, they climb from one side to the other, they just, you know, the local people take their cows up there, the dogs and the monkeys are up there. Only the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have this vow not to step on the hill. The deity of Gopinath in Aniur, established by Madhavendra Puri on top of the hill. Madhavendra Puri was before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so this rule was not in place at that time. And Madhavendra Puri, with all the local residents, the Brahmins and others, climbed to the top of Govardhan Hill. In Aniur, presently it's the highest point of Govardhan. Here the hill is about 13 meters high, at the highest points here. In Aniur it reaches 17 meters, and that's the highest Govardhan is at present, 17 meters high. And that's the spot, the highest point, basically, or a little bit past it, is where the deity of Gopal was established by Madhavendra Puri. And that temple, a temple is there, not the original. So it was worshipped by Madhavendra Puri and his disciples, and Raghunath Das Goswami, when he was living at Radhakunda, he was chief of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas at that time, and he had to consider the difficulty that the Gaudiya Vaishnavas were worshipping Gopal, but they weren't supposed to climb on the hill. How can you go up there? How can the pujari go up the hill and walk on it to do his service? So Raghunath Das Goswami made a decision to turn the worship of Gopal over to the followers of Ballabhacharya, who didn't have that restriction. And from that time, they've been worshiping. The son of Ballabhacharya, Vitala, was personally given the worship, the responsibility for worshiping the Gopal deity by Raghunath Das Goswami. And Raghunath Das acknowledges that, mentions that in his Stavavali. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu worshiped Govardhan with great reverence. He gave one Govardhan Shila that he had been worshiping, he gave that Shila to Raghunath Das Goswami. He did the parikrama, and certainly the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also were very glad to do this parikrama. Shyamananda Prabhu, Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivas Acharya, they all came here and did Govardhan Puja and established their deities on the side of Govardhan. And since then, countless devotees are coming here to do the worship of Govardhan, first of all by doing the parikrama. Just simply walking around Govardhan is the prime act of worshiping him. This is what Prabhupada calls, and what Rupa Goswami calls, the second most favorite place of Krishna, after Radhakunda, is Govardhan. It's different here. Vrindavan forest, the place of Krishna's autumn Rasleela, Vamshivata, the area around that, which has become the Vrindavan city. By Krishna's arrangement, that's open to everybody in the world. All sorts of people come there. There are many different sampradayas, and many other people who aren't following any sampradaya. And everything goes on in Vrindavan. And anybody can freely go there and stay there if they want, and have enough money, you can build a house and stay there. Krishna doesn't make restrictions. But Govardhan, at least so far, is not like that. People come here, they do their parikrama, they may stay one or two days, that's it, then they have to go. They're building these condominiums, but not so many people have moved in yet.
it's a more exclusive place spiritually. We must maintain an attitude of respect for Govardhan. If you're worshiping Govardhan Shila or thinking about it, it should not be done lightly. When you're doing the Pradakama, you should try to maintain an attitude of respect. Indra learned that lesson. Even though he's such an important man, and everybody worships him in the whole universe, and even though his name is up in lights in the Rig Veda, still he had to submit and admit that Govardhan was superior. Superior, better devotee than me. So, as important a devotee as we think we are, we have to come here and bow down to Govardhan and acknowledge that he's Krishna's best devotee. Hare Krishna. Okay. I said a few things. But Purijan Prabhu is going to tell us something from the Ananda Vrindavan Temple. Something about, something sweet about Govardhan Leela. So I'm eager to hear that. Please, can you take over? Okay, but can you sit here and talk? Very good.
Om Agyanata Mirandasya Jana Jana Salakaya Chaksu Samiratan Jena Tasmai Sri Guru Venama Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Padamayam Nibhati Shapandam Vansha Kalpa Trivyasya Kripa Sandhu Vajivasya Patitanam Kavanevya Vaisnavya Just imagine how many devotees all over the world, perhaps the universe, are wishing they could be sitting at the feet of Giriraj Govardhan on this day. So we're quite fortunate. Our Prabhu Gopi Pranadana has given us some very deep and important hint as we are aspiring to be devotees, that we should be very careful to avoid pride. Gopi Pranada Prabhu is translating the Sandarbhas now, and in Bhakti Sandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami says that pride is the result of offense. Pride in, for a devotee is a result of offenses. So we have to be very careful about that.
Yeah. Okay.
Obviously. Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, who Gopi Pranatapu was speaking of as prime resident of Giriraj Govardhan, he warned in his Manasiksha that we have to be careful of pride, prestige, and desiring these things. Mahaprabhu himself told Sanatana Goswami to avoid this upasaka, gun, the weed of pride. Because if we develop, if we pour water, the water of Nitya Seshi Shavanadi Jal, the water of hearing and chanting upon the weed of pride, it will grow and it will kill our devotion, and we will never ever be able to enter into or fulfill the deepest desire of to become servants of Krishna in Sri Vrindavan Dham. So taking that lesson and hearing it and being very embarrassed, still I'll read some parts of Ananda Vrindavan Champu from Kavi Kanapur, Srila Kavi Kanapur, who had the amazing fortune of sucking upon the toe of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So from his, because of tasting that nectar, so much sweetness has come from him. So, and Gopi Pranathabhu has, he's given his, us his lesson from Indra at the end. I'll read parts about the Leela itself. So when Krishna, as we know the pastime, Krishna spoke to Nanda Maharaj and convinced Nanda Maharaj that instead of worshipping Indra, that instead they should worship Govardhan Hill. So after hearing Krishna's speech, that very strong dharmic speech, convincing speech, that don't worship Indra, just worship Govardhan Hill. We don't have a relationship with Indra, practically speaking. Nanda Maharaj and the leading men of Vrindavan accepted his proposal. The specific quality of the residents of Vrindavan is they will do anything to please Krishna. They agreed that this must be done to satisfy their desires. So acting as the acharya of the yajna, Krishna directed the Brijbasis to worship Giriraj with all the paraphernalia that they had collected for the worship of Indra. And this, of course, made Indra extremely angry. Nothing else could be heard in Vrindavan except the auspicious vibration of the instruments, instrumental music. Vedic hymns resounded throughout the sky, and the Brijbasis felt very blissful. And all the living entities entered a jolly mood because they had worshipped Giriraj Govardhan. And hearing the melodious voices of the ladies, the cuckoo birds anxiously tried to learn singing from them. Ears attained their purpose by perceiving those auspicious sounds. The cows were adorned with gold-plated horns. Colorful silks were on their back. Pearl necklaces and tinkling bells hung from their necks. And seeing their mothers so richly ornamented, the calves jumped excitedly. Nanda Maharaj brought the necessary articles from his house to worship Govardhan Hill, and he himself initiated the puja by respectfully offering padya, and he washed Giriraj's feet. In a joyful mood, he made the Anakuta Hill complete with powerful peaks. So the hill of the food, the food they meant to offer to Giriraj, it stretched from the town of Anayur all the way to here, yes? And this is called Anakuta Chetra. So it was a huge amount of food that was being offered to Giriraj. And it was high too. There were peaks on that mountain of food, powerful peaks that delighted all in attendance. And the peaks rising out of the middle of the hill looked like a crown made of white camphor. The multicolored cakes stuck on the sides of the Anakuta Hill looked like stones and boulders. And at the base of the hill, there were clay pots that were full of milk, yogurt, and sweet rice. There were also sabjis, lakes of dal, and fragrant soups. So it was so, so huge and beautiful and fragrant. Due to its covering of ghee, the Annakuta mountain looked like a golden Mount Kailash, shimmering under a cover of rain. Different kinds of fruits and flowers decorated its edges. Everything was so auspicious. And when Nanda Maharaj saw the opulence of the Annakuta spreading its sweet aroma of cloves, camphor, cardamom in all directions, he felt that this was a fitting honor for Giriraj, because Giriraj is the Raj, the king of all mountains. So when Krishna saw that, he smiled happily when he saw the amazing Annakuta, which rivaled the size of Mount Sumeru. And suddenly, playful, fun-loving Krishna assumed a huge form that he had never assumed before. And he stood on top of Govardhan Hill. Why did he do this? He wanted to instill faith in the residents of Vrindavan. And also, he wanted to make one person angry. And that person was Indra. This form of Krishna glowed like a thousand suns. And at the same time, Krishna remained amongst the coward men in his original human-like form. And he cast a gentle glance upon everyone and said, "Look, by using all the paraphernalia to exclusively worship Govardhan Hill with pure love, you have received the favor of Giriraj. Govardhan, the best of mountains, has now manifested before you himself as a beautifully effulgent person." "Please," Krishna himself said, "look closely. The huge mouth of this expanded form of Giriraj resembles a deep cave. And although his mouth is massive and huge, he looks as beautiful as the full moon. And usually trees serve as his arms, but now he has two beautiful arms that have beautiful jewels covering them. Usually hard rocks cover his body, but now his form is sweet and tender. Look at that beautiful body as it walks on the non-moving form of Giriraj." Krishna himself and all the residents of Vrindavan bowed down to this personified form of Govardhan Hill. In effect, Krishna actually was offering obeisances to himself. And when the coward men, their wives, and the leading men of Vrindavan saw that the form was shining like the sun, they raised their folded hands above their heads and they said, "Namo, Namo." They offered their obeisances and glorified Giriraj. And being overwhelmed with affection, they danced around joyously, ecstatically. By joyfully worshipping Govardhan Hill, the Brishbasis realized that Giriraj Govardhan is not just a mountain, but that he's a person. This point is very important for us to remember in this day. He's a person. That means that he can reciprocate with us, with our offerings, with our prayers, with our desires to please him. He's a person, a very sweet and gentle person. Music from the temples wherein different demigods were being worshipped resounded in all directions. From all sides, intoxicated dancers performed blissfully. The heavenly kanaras joined in with euphoric dancing, and relishing the music and singing, the Brishbasis forgot themselves in that joyous Govardhan festival. And Giriraj Govardhan caused the entire atmosphere to become so joyous and happy. And Govardhan Hill affectionately accepted the faithful worship of Nanda Maharaj by manifesting this personal form. Here is one reason why I wanted to read this part, because there is a Shruti Phal. Anyone who simply hears and chants about the glories of Giriraj Govardhan which are inconceivable to ordinary people, will be delivered from all calamities. The hearers and the readers. Their hearts full of joy, the Brijbasis talked excitedly amongst themselves as they did parikrama of Giriraj Govardhan. Skilled musicians led the way on the parikrama by playing the finest of musical instruments. The languid, muffled tones of bedis, dakas, and kettle drums softened the atmosphere with their pleasing vibrations. And with their bodies decorated with designs drawn in kunkum, the cowherd boys followed behind the musicians. They held their sticks and they fearlessly drove the multicolored cows who were ornamented with gold and jewels. A second group of talented musicians came along playing flutes and veenas. Next came singers with sweet, gentle voices and ecstatic dancers moving in rows, one behind another. Then the gopis, their faces glowing with happiness. They came riding on bullock carts that rivaled the golden chariots of the gods. And they sang loudly about their pastimes, their activities, their dealings with Krishna. Because that's all they did. Day, night, this festival, that festival. They were so much immersed in their relationship with Krishna. They always and only sang his glories. Hari, who removes all obstacles, laughed and joked with his coward boyfriends as he circumambulated Govardhan Hill. Eternally bound to him in faith, Krishna's friends remained fearless and free from all anxieties. Wearing a sweet-smelling flower garland across his broad chest, Nandamaraj walked just behind the boys. He was smiling in great satisfaction, accompanied by the leading men of Vrindavan. In accordance to scriptural injunctions, they gave charity to brahmanas at different places while going around Giriraj. It is impossible to find a suitable container to hold the unlimited bliss that the Brijbasis felt during their parikram around Giriraj. How sweetly he has said that. The bliss they were feeling in Krishna's association going around Giriraj, really to please him, there is no container big enough to be able to hold that bliss. And although tiny in size, the soul can enjoy immeasurable happiness. As a result, their souls drowned in inconceivable joy. The continuous music of the dakas and kettle drums, which are famous in heaven and earth, increase the bliss of parikrama. But as this wonderful, blissful festival was going on, there was someone who was not happy, and that was Indra. In fact, not only was he not happy, he was angry. And in fact, not only was he angry, he was burning with a forest fire of rage. "Just see how surprising it is," he said. "The intelligence of these cowherd men is just like the animals that they tend. When we get angry, we don't care who we insult. They stop my puja by hearing a few words from a mere child. Even though many goddesses of learning praise me, these offensive cowherd men..." You know that saying that when you're pointing at somebody else, there's three fingers pointing at you? He's accusing the cowherd men of being offensive, and look what he's saying. "They have been overtaken by false pride." Very interesting that Indra is saying that at this point. "Oh, virtuous cowherd men," sarcasm. "Now you act deviously without any fear of anyone. We will see how long your fearlessness lasts. This foolish, arrogant, and talkative child has offended me And even though you claim he satisfies your desires and he is the one who gives you a long, prosperous life, we will soon see if this is actually a fact. We will see if he is actually your well-wisher. So overcome by revenge, Indra considered for a moment how to retaliate against the Vrijbasis. An angry Indra then released the powerful clouds of universal destruction. The clouds that are meant to destroy the universe. He called those to pour those rains upon little Vrindavan. He was so angry because someone had diminished his position. Krishna wanted to make him angry. He told them, you have an unadulterated mood, a pure mood to destroy the whole creation within you. But this assignment involves just one small region of the universe. Go shake the earth with your thunder and destroy Vrindavan with a great flood. Being released from the task of devastating the universe at a particular time, Sanvartakan of the servants of Indra proudly stepped forward to accomplish their mission. First, a vast bank of clouds appearing like a huge patch of moss in the sky blocked out the sun, and it covered Vrindavan in total darkness. Extending from Rasatala to Swagaloka, the cloud covering looked like a smoky breath exhaled from the Naga snakes. One fantastically large cloud bank appeared like a second Lokaloka mountain range, and the hard peaks of those clouds continued to grow higher and higher as they expanded in all directions. Then they began to pour down rain. The cows, with these great, huge pillars, pillar-like drops and torrents of rain, the cows sheltered their calves under the blanket of loose skin on their necks. And in fear of the slashing rainwater, the cows kept their eyes almost closed and their tails were hanging straight down. As they shivered uncontrollably, the cows were so distressed by this. They were shivering uncontrollably from the violent rains. The skin on their backs swelled up. While standing in this painful condition, who did they look to for shelter? Only to Krishna. This is the mark of a Vrijbasi. They only know one shelter, and that is Krishna. When the rain hit the horns of the bulls, it bounced off and landed on their thick, fatty humps. And breaking into small pearl-like drops, it rolled down to their broad muscular backs. Alas, alas, the fierce rainfall angered and tormented the bulls. Observing the torrents of rain, which fell in columns, the columns of the rain were as thick as the full trunks of full-grown banana trees. The coward men of Vrindavan thought that the devastation of the universe had come. They were terrified. They were weakened. And they approached Krishna, who makes everyone happy. Full of pain and agony, they said, "Oh Krishna, you always save us. And you always give us happiness. Now, we are in great danger. Since you are the Lord of Gokul, immediately protect us. The earth is quickly submerging in a flood, and we cannot distinguish the high ground from the low ground. Just look around and see for yourself.
the Sarabi cows are using their own bodies to protect their calves from the hail that is pelting them. With their tear-filled eyes, they are speaking to you, because in Vrindavan so much is done through the subtleness of glances. They are speaking to you with their tear-filled eyes. O Krishna, you once saved us from the devastating forest fire, so please save us from this terrifying rainstorm. They appealed further, the Brijbasis appealed further to Krishna. Look at the condition of the bulls, because they know Krishna's heart, how much affection he has for the cows and the bulls. Look at the condition of the bulls. Upon hitting their humps, the heavy hailstones are being ground into pieces and scattering on the ground like pearls. Their eyes are reddened in rage. The bulls raise their heads to look angrily at the clouds. Their faces and bodies are completely drenched in water. How much they are suffering. This devastation seems like the personification of a big anarta that we cannot remove. Only you can deliver us. Therefore, we surrender unto you. We are your loving kinsmen, so please save us. After hearing the anxious pleas of the Brijbasis, and after seeing the distress of the cows, Krishna, whose eyes blossom like a lotus flower and are beautiful to hold, he considered this must be the work of angry Indra. And in a compassionate voice, sweeter than honey, Krishna consoled his family and his friends. Do not be afraid. Actually, this misery is as significant as the hunger pain is to one who has just consumed a sumptuous feast. It's insignificant. Listen to this. Anyone practicing devotional service can easily remove all anartas. The Kanaras and demigods glorify this fact, and for your benefit, I will now enact a special pastime that will destroy the mountain of Indra's pride. As the relisher of nectarian rasa, Krishna has the most beautiful body, which is as sweet as the honey in a flower. Without even tightening his cloth, when Krishna climbed the Kadamba tree to chastise Kaliya, he first tightened the cloth around his waist, fixed his turban, fixed his hair, and then he went up to perform his mighty pastime. But in this pastime, showing even little significance to the wonderful task he was now going to perform, he didn't even bother tightening his dhoti. Rather, he showed complete indifference to the mighty wrath of foolish Indra, and instantly he picked up Govardhan Hill with one hand. The whole hill, he picked it up with one hand and held it aloft with no more effort than a child takes to hold up a mushroom, or an elephant uses to lift a small clump of grass. This is nothing. What can we lift? I won't do this to you. But what with the little finger of our left hand means, it means it's insignificant. Because Krishna has unlimited power, Achintya Shakti, Purna Achintya Shakti, Saraishwarya Purna. So he lifted up Govardhan Hill, and then as he did that, Srila Kavi Kanapur provides some details. Many sounds echoed in all directions. When the mountain rose in the air, the echoes sounded like a bunch of rowdy children yelling within its many caves. The lifting of Govardhan Hill produced an angry, loud noise. that crushed the pride of the elephants guarding the eight directions, and that furious sound roamed around and around within the covering of the universe. The flowers falling from the trees. Upon Giriraj appeared to be the form of Giriraj's ecstatic laughter, because he was being touched by the lotus hand of Krishna. Those falling flowers seemed to be Giriraj celebrating the destruction of Indra's fame. Growing higher and higher, the sharp peaks of Giriraj cut the clouds covering the area to pieces. And the row of trees along the peaks of Giriraj challenged the trees in Indra's celestial forest. The lions living on top of Govardhan Hill mistook the hovering clouds for elephants, and using their powerful sharp claws, they ripped apart that cluster of elephantine clouds. In fear, the clouds ran hither and thither. And seeing Krishna holding Giriraj, little Krishna, 7 years old, holding this huge mountain, the king of mountains, Giriraj, Mount Kailash shivered in fright, thinking, "Look, who is covering the sky? How could this happen?" Mount Sumeru panicked, overwhelmed with fear. And while holding Giriraj in one hand, Krishna, whose wonderful behavior illuminates the world, he spoke with firm conviction to the coward community. "Oh, mother, do not be in anxiety. Oh, father, do not worry. Oh, friends, do not doubt my ability. Giriraj will not fall from my hand. You directly saw how he personally accepted our worship. Is it then difficult for him to remain suspended in the sky?" Giriraj had just assumed this huge form that had consumed all the mountain of foods that were offered. "You have seen all this. Now, although Giriraj appears to be a huge, immovable mountain, he is transcendentally situated beyond the doubts and comprehension of this material world. Just look how light he is. Even a child like me can easily pick him up. Krishna is very clever." "Oh, just see," he continued. "Giriraj is completely independent, and he's moving according to his own sweet will. In this matter, I am but an instrument. Therefore, you collect all your property and come under this mountain. There's no difference between the village of Vrindavan and this valley below Giriraj. Be happy and stay here peacefully. When I lifted the hill, because remember, there was so much rain pouring down at this time. Indra was continuing pouring rain and rain and rain. So Krishna says, "When I lifted the hill, huge chunks of earth fell off the bottom. And this formed the natural boundary wall around the perimeter of Giriraj, because a valley was created." So one could ask, "Well, isn't that going to become a lake with all this rain?" So Krishna says, "Don't worry about that. When I lifted the mountain, there's a huge boundary wall surrounding this valley, and it is protecting from the rain entering. This will keep out all the rain. Forget about your pleasure gardens, and forget about your attachment to your former residences. Let this place become the source of joyful pastimes for the cows, gopins, and gopis." That basically is what Krishna is telling all of us, the same thing. Forget about whatever pleasures you think are in this world. Forget about the associates that you cherish in this world. You come where I want you to go. Don't worry, you won't be losing anything. Let this place, let the land of Vrindavan, become the source of joyful pastimes for the cows, the gopis, and gopis. The string of Giridhari's reassuring words resembled an elegant necklace made from the nectar of his voice. Immediately, the elderly gopis felt completely pacified by Krishna's sweet words, and taking their wealth, their sons, their wives, their cows, their priests, all felt immeasurable happiness, and they beamed with matchless beauty, and they entered that splendid valley beneath Giriraj Govardhan, and they took shelter there. And as they took shelter, they smiled with delight and surprise. They saw that the valley beneath Giriraj Govardhan was dazzling in attractive light, and it could easily accommodate all their innumerable cows, their animals, and their family members. The valley brimmed with gratifying sense objects to see, to touch, and so on, to taste. That divine place was the very ornament of the earth. Its purity and opulence exceeded the wealth of the subterranean heavenly planets like Sutal, and fields of rich grass, barley, green barley, spread in all directions, because green is a color that is soothing to the eyes and the mind. And many lakes full of crystal clear waters stood here and there. The cows stayed near the border of the improvised town, and they pastured on fields full of fresh green grass. There was already fresh green grass there growing for them, because Krishna had arranged the perfect situation for them. The Brijbasis stood around peacefully in different groups. Some cowherd men mixed with the Brahmins. The elderly married ladies stayed with their daughters. Radhika and other prominent young married gopis gathered beside them. Krishna's intimate friends like Batu remained just by his side. And Nanda, Yashoda, and Balaram stood slightly in front of Krishna as he held up Giriraj Govardhan. Thus the venerable Vrishbhasis relished great joy associating intimately with Krishna. They no longer felt any fear or any discomfort from Indra's deluge, which threatened to destroy the entire world. The rain falling from the roaring clouds sounded like water pouring from the mouths of many large water pots. Although situated in different directions, all, please listen to this, this is what they were doing. Although they were situated in different directions, all the Brijbasis gazed at, to their heart's content, at the gorgeous lotus face of Giridhari, of Krishna, the lifter of Govardhan Hill. Each devotee saw that Krishna was looking directly at him. And feeling relieved, the illustrious Brahmanas offered abundant blessings to the blissful younger brother of Balaram, and Krishna descended on earth to perform his transcendental pastimes and to crush the pride of the demons and the devotees. No, I'm sorry. I was just thinking. I was thinking that Krishna is doing such a good job of crushing my pride. He needs more work. Not that I'm a devotee, but that's what I was thinking. How Krishna is so good. We have our plans, how we're going to do this and how we're going to do that. And Krishna is so expert at making arrangements to crush our pride. Because without that great obstacle of pride being removed, we cannot actually take shelter of Krishna and his holy names and make advancement in Krishna consciousness. So the actual reading is to crush the pride of the demons and the demigods. The devotees, they have no pride. So all the Brijbasis were underneath the hill. Everyone was satisfied there. What did they do? They were staring at Krishna, his beautiful lotus-like face. And to lighten the heart of his beloved friend Krishna, Batu, Madhu Mangal, said, "Oh, dear most friend of the whole world, please listen to my words. By my Brahmana Tejas,
I will fill you with happiness. He said to Krishna. This is the glorious relationship that the coward boys, Maru Mangal, and the other residents of Vrindavan, there's no, the reverence that we require is simply not there. It's there, but it is overwhelmed by their madhurya bhav, by the sweetness of their love for him. It is, their love for him is so intense that it overwhelms any feeling of Aishwarya, even though they're seeing Krishna performing Aishwarya Leela, holding up a hill. Listen to what Maru Mangala is saying. When I am here as your friend, why are you troubling yourself by lifting Giriraj? O lotus-eyed one, just order me and I will hold up this great mountain on the tip of my golden stick. You must be exhausted from holding the hill, so now you can relax, take some rest, and I will hold the hill. Brajeshwari Yasoda then addressed her son. Her mood is completely different. Vatsalya Prema. Oh, my darling child, you always act impudently due to the force of your uncontrolled senses. For years, we peacefully observed the Indrajagya, but then you abruptly stopped it. Disregarding the demigods never brings auspiciousness. How can one find fortune if one shows enmity towards the demons or the demigods? In the presence of these two fears, how can we enjoy living here? Although Krishna's body is inexhaustible and it is filled, it is composed of bliss, Yasoda thought that he had overworked himself by holding up the hill. Considering that, she expressed a motherly affection by reaching up to lovingly touch his lotus hand that held the hill. And while doing this, she said, oh, how can your hand, which is as pure and as soft as fresh butter, bear the heavy weight of this mountain without any help or other support? Oh, Giriraj, she began to pray, be compassionate and give me a boon. Fulfill my desire. And when any Brijbasi does anything, whatever it looks like, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami Maharaj explains this in fourth Adi 4 very clearly. Whatever, whether gopis or any, they gopis may be combing their hair, they may be looking in the mirror, they may be dressing themselves, their only desire is to please Krishna. So Brajeshwari Yashoda Devi, fearing for Krishna, she's praying to Giriraj. Oh, please be compassionate and give me a boon if you are actually some worshipable God. She had seen Giriraj, a wonderful form. Then do something. Do something to become soft and lightweight so my Krishna will not feel any distress. Oh, Honorable One, all my son's actions are in accordance with the instructions of Shastra and saintly persons. Please do not allow him to be inconvenienced. Raghunath Das Goswami says that Mother Yasoda, she is willing to give up her life thousands and thousands of times if it will save Krishna from having to exude one drop of perspiration. This is the nature of the residents of Vrindavan. If we are inspired to become a resident in Vrindavan, no problem. All you have to do is love Krishna with this kind of intensity and this kind of mood. Remove all selfishness, remove all any other self-interest. That's all it takes. And then if the residents of Vrindavan so wish to bless us. And of course the problem is I want to become a resident of Vrindavan and take my false ego in. But the door is very, very small and my false ego is very big. And Bhaktu immediately replied, Mother,
Almighty, do not speak like this. How can you say Krishna's in distress? Listen, what good has that angry Indra done for us? He brutally attacked us with his dense dark clouds because she was saying this is distress caused by getting Indra angry at us. So he's saying, what good has he done for us? He sent dense dark clouds and fierce lightning bolts. Now just appreciate what? The dazzling sweetness that Krishna has manifest in his pastime of lifting Giriraj Govardhan. Had Indra not become angry, then we would not have the chance to relish this nectar through our eyes and looking at that beautiful form of Krishna. Mother Yasoda replied to Marumangala, O bold one, holding a heavy load over the head can never be a show of sweetness. Lifting the enormous weight of Giriraj will cause one to be distressed and disabled. Just see the locks of curly hair on Krishna's forehead are wet from perspiration. His face is dried out and has become like a pale like a lotus wilted by the snow. His hands and feet have a ruddy reddish color. How can a mother's heart, oh Shiva, oh Shiva, tolerate seeing such hardship performed by my son? And Krishna says, he intercedes, Mother, there cannot be any more fun than this. Why are you worried about me for nothing? Just see, the great mountain of Govardhan is floating by its own power in the open sky. I told you before that this body of mine is acting just as an instrument of his will. Yasoda replied, My dear son, that may be true, but how can you not be tired of? For you've been standing there for so long and holding that mountain with your raised arm. Just try it sometime. Without even holding a mountain, just keep your hand in the air for 10 minutes. You can't do it, practically speaking. So Mother Yasoda's heart is breaking because her only concern is Krishna's pleasure. That's Vrindavan. Oh, intelligent one, I will believe what you said, that that Govardhan is light as a feather and floating there by its own power. If Giriraj now gives up the joyful association of your lotus hand and then flies around in the sky and plays on its own. Marumangal said, O Queen of Vrindavan, don't you know that this great mountain is sitting on the lotus hand of Krishna by the strength of my mantras and special powers? Therefore, my friend is not feeling any pain from holding Giriraj. This is natural because everyone is favorably disposed towards the Lord of their hearts. Yasoda said, O impudent one, what kind of nonsense are you speaking? I'm burning in anxiety over my son. His tendency is to act independently without caring for any good instruction. And now you come here, you make jokes, and you laugh about it. Nanda Maharaj enters. Why are you scolding Batu? In this world, a person who is expert at diplomacy will use very affectionate words to encourage one in difficult situations. So understanding the need of the time, Marumangal has spoken appropriately. Beside that, our dear son very much appreciates the words of Batu. And meanwhile, as this conversation was going on, the rest of the Brijbasis, they stood around Giridhari, just admiring the sweetness of his gorgeous transcendental form. Due to their affection for Krishna, the sinless Brijbasis transgressed ordinary etiquette, and they talked loudly amongst themselves about his extraordinary beauty. So there's some explanation of Krishna's beauty that the Brijbasis is saying. And then someone said, we'll skip some. Oh, look at Krishna. While holding Giriraj nonchalantly, casually, in one hand, he's holding his flute in his other hand and pressing his flute gently to his lips. He's playing soft, sweet tunes that are filling us with such happiness. So Krishna is holding the hill with one hand and he started playing his flute. And noticing this, Maru Mangal said with great alarm, "Oh, my friend, do not be so daring. Do not play your flute. How will you protect your friends today if Giriraj becomes ecstatic from hearing the sweet melodies of your flute and in his ecstasy he begins to shake and fall off your hand? Your flute has the power to destroy everything. Simply hearing it, mountains melt into rivers and rivers turn into stone. Look, it can do so many incredible things." And the cowherd boy said, "Oh, Batu, may this mountain maintain his patience and keep protecting us from this calamitous situation. If Giriraj melts into a river, he himself will become the source of our destruction. But that will not happen. A person with great patience may sometimes thrill with ecstasy, but he quickly recovers his composure. There is not the slightest fear that Giriraj may change his position. Just relish the honey nectar of Krishna's flute and give up your restlessness." Another person said, "Though we are in the middle of a terrible devastation, we're delighting in a conversation full of joking and laughter. While relishing these nectarian talks, we do not feel any anxiety. We don't feel any disturbance at all." One Brijbasi said, "Oh, Radhika, your face is superbly beautiful. Oh, Srimati Radharani, do not make your eyebrows dance while Krishna is holding up Govardhana, for that will severely agitate his mind. Then his arm will start shaking violently and cause the mountain to immediately fall from his hand. Please do not cause such a perilous situation." So all these very sweet joking words were going on. Seeing the prominent cowherd men, they at that time decided that Krishna must be getting tired, so they put their sticks up to help him. And we see that there's a famous picture of the cowherd men holding up their sticks helping. Well, looking at the cowherd men holding up Giriraj with their sticks, Batu said, "Oh, residents of Vrindavan, do not be afraid. You are just scratching the body of Giriraj with your sticks. But you should not think that it's you who's holding up the hill. Krishna is not the least bit tired. Besides, he is the brother of Balaram, who is famous for his unlimited strength. The pure and potent body of Krishna is emitting a dazzling radiance." So then it continues. So while all this is going on, then Yasoda begins to speak again. "Just like a cow hankering to see her calf, Yasoda stepped forward and spoke affectionately to her son. Oh, beloved one, the day has moved along, and you appear afflicted and lackluster from not eating. Your belly has caved in, and your jeweled belt has slipped off. Seeing that your lotus face has weathered from fasting, the cows refuse to eat anything or move an inch from here, even though nearby the fields are rich with grains. Therefore, oh beloved one, I appeal to you because you are very compassionate. The cows won't eat because you appear to be fasting. So please stop playing artistically on your flute. Drop your right arm so I can feed you with my hand. One whose actions are exemplary will adjust his behavior according to the conditions. I've brought some warm, soft cakes and tasty, creamy yogurt with thin skin on top. Now take these delicious items, along with Rama and your friends." And Batu said, "Oh, my dear friend, your mother has spoken correctly. You should never go against her. Moreover, I am also upset with hunger." Krishna, the crest jewel of relishes, said, "Oh, mother, I do not feel like a single moment has passed. Yet why do others think this short time to be so long? But since one should not disobey his superiors, I think it is proper for me to gladly eat from your hand. Meanwhile, while all these sweet talking and discussions and pastimes were taking place, there was still one person who was not relishing the sweetness of that pastime. And who was that? It was Indra. So he held a lightning bolt in his hand, and he sped through the sky on his carrier elephant, whose name was Arivata. And though sitting on his elephant carrier, Indra actually rode on the chariot of his own anger. And showing unflinching affection towards the rain clouds, Indra cracked the sky, and he made everyone cry with tumultuous thundering sounds. And hissing like an angry snake, Indra raced to Vrindavan to survey the situation, since he had already sent the Samvartaka clouds a few days before. He assumed that Vrindavan must be totally demolished. Astonishment seized Indra's mind when he saw the peaks of Govardhan piercing the huge Samvartaka clouds and soaring above them. The deer, the birds, and other living entities of Vrindavan were wandering around on Giriraj completely happily. They were unaffected by the torrents of rain. And clusters of white clouds completely covered the base of Govardhan. And those clouds enhanced the beauty of Giriraj as they washed the mountain with the rains of devastation. Giriraj looked like a huge umbrella. And with the clouds seemed like decorative fringes of pearls ornamenting that umbrella. While observing this, Indra was still thinking himself the supreme controller, and he decided to exhibit the full extent of his anger. This is the product of big false ego. Kama Esha Krodha Esha Rajamuno Samuprava. Cruel-hearted Indra disrespected both the cows and the Lord. In order to destroy the land of cows, he instigated the clouds of devastation to thunder menacingly and pour incessant rains on Vrindavan. With the mood of a determined fighter, the furious storm tried to blow Giriraj off of Krishna's hand with severe winds. And Sri Hari, his effulgent jewel-like body washed by the moonlight of his smile, instantly remove whatever hardship Giriraj felt from the lightning bolts, from the heavy hailstorm, from the profuse rain and the high piercing winds. By seeing Krishna's effulgence and feeling this, because all this was, the lightning was striking Giriraj, the rainstorms, the winds were all pushing Giriraj. But seeing Krishna's effulgence and feeling the sweet breath from his lustrous lotus face, Giriraj felt totally relieved while relishing the exciting adventures of the Lord. His ecstasy was so great he felt no inconvenience. Outside the shelter of the hill, the fearsome thunderbolts crisscrossing the sky looked like creepers of light dangling in the air. So the thunder was shaking and the lightning was bolting. And everyone under the hill was ecstatic. To completely remove the Brijbasi's anxiety about his fatigue, that's what they were in anxiety about. Oh, Krishna may be tired from holding the hill. Krishna again began playing on his murli. And hearing that ambrosial sound, one Brijbasi said, "Look, look, a blue lotus hangs over Krishna's left ear, and the pleasing vibration of his blissful flute spreads in all directions. In this joyful pastime, his creeper-like right eyebrow raises slightly as if saying, What can you say about my left hand, which is effortlessly holding up Giriraj? Thus glittering with excellence, the all-attractive Giridhari displays his sweet power. By the mercy of Govardhan Hill, the Brijbasis did not feel the least bit disturbed. Rather, they tasted endless happiness, passing their time absorbed in loving thoughts of Krishna. This pastime completely astonished the Brahmins and the other devotees fixed in Shantaras. So everyone was exchanging in their different rasas, as we've been hearing, according to their relationship with Krishna. And Yasoda Mai took some tambula. She made this very special betel nut tambula, and she put it together in a very, very special way. She held it in her hand, and she tenderly offered it to Krishna, and she began to plead with him. Oh, my darling Damodar, please stop playing your melodious merle. The sound of the flute cannot fill your stomach. Please take this and remove my anxiety. Why are you disturbing my mind by not eating? Now eat this wonderful tambula. This will enchant your mind. If you do not want it, then at least eat something. Something that you like very much. You have passed many days without eating, so do not delay any more. If you're waiting for the rain to stop, then please consider that your brother Balaram is very much afflicted by hunger. Since you would do anything for Balaram, please honor my request. Please accept this tambour. After saying this, Yasoda said, Subal, you are overflowing with love for Krishna. Since you are also the dear object of his affection, will you please offer this tambour to Krishna? Saying this, Yasoda put the tambour in Subal's hand. Krishna's dear friend, Subal, he felt unbounded happiness as he held the tambour in one hand. And he removed Krishna's hand because Krishna was holding, what was he holding in his hand, his right hand? His murli. And he couldn't take the murli out with his left hand. So Subal carefully removed the murli from Krishna's hand, and taking the edges of his cloth, he gently cleansed Krishna's lotus-like face, which was adorned with aguru and slightly reddish in color. And seeing Krishna's lips turn red from chewing the tambul offered by Subal, Yasoda finally smiled in happiness. But outside the umbrella of Giriraj, the huge cloud formation sent by furious Indra poured incessant rains and blew fierce hurricane winds. Yet, not one particle of dust washed off the surface of Giriraj. The deer, the birds, the animals, even the leaves on the trees remained totally unaffected by the devastating storm. The deluge, the flood which assailed the earth after being brought from the ocean by the clouds, again ran back to the sea. The discomfort the clouds underwent from swallowing the ocean water and vomiting it back was only the only result that they got from their proposed calamity. The storm tried his best to show off his power, but he soon became totally exhausted from pouring rain endlessly. Alas, alas, the clouds retreated, and they fell at the feet of their master, Indra. An illusion by his rage, Indra felt no fatigue as he continued to attack Giriraj. Just see what anger and false ego can do. Being blinded by anger, he finally lost all his intelligence, and he went totally blind. The torrential rains and cyclones, winds, harassed Vrindavan continually for 7 days. Although repeatedly trying to fulfill the orders of Indra, whose intelligence was more crooked than millions of lightning bolts, the clouds could not destroy or even slightly disturb the people of Vrindavan. The big clouds and their assistants almost died from their hard labor to please Indra, although pulled down from his platform of false pride, and although completely defeated, the shameful Indra retained his fighting spirit. Those 7 days felt like 7 millenniums of intense pain for Indra, yet the Brijbasis saw it as 7 joy-filled hours. All just see the wonderful splendor of the Lord's divine prowess, which transcends the comprehension of even Brahma and Shiva. Although Govardhan Hill is immovable, it rests upon the hand of Krishna. For 7 long days, the monsoon rains and horrific earth-shaking winds tortured the people of the world with bitter suffering and untold miseries. The serene and peaceful Giriraj, however, was not the least bit disturbed. Being constantly bathed by the rains and anointed by the fragrance of Krishna's divine body, Giriraj looked absolutely radiant and beautiful throughout the whole idea. And by the mercy of Krishna, the danger finally ended. In the distance, the Brijbasis looked, and they saw the gateways and rooftop rooms of their houses glittering attractively from being washed by the heavy rains. But clouds began to part. A fresh, clear sky appeared to fill all directions with auspiciousness. The people of Vrindavan felt they had just emerged from a deep, dark well of calamity and come to the light of good fortune. After aborting 7 children represented by the 7 days and nights, the wife of time now gave birth to a beautiful son appearing as the auspicious 8th day. On that day, the Supreme Lord Giridhari said, "The fierce winds and rains have now ceased, and the sky is totally free from the cloud of devastation, free from the thick covering of mud. The earth is now dry and smooth." After falling unconscious for 1 week, the sun opened his eyes. "O residents of Vrindavan, your village has returned now to its normal state. Now is the time to come out from beneath this mountain." After hearing this, everyone assembled in a happy mood and let out the cows. The cows considered themselves fortunate because they got to relish the sweetness of Krishna's face for 7 continuous days. They lost interest in other things that had previously pleased them. When the coward boys called them out, they delayed for a while, and then they shot out like a volley of arrows. But then they were the first ones from out under the hill, and they looked back and they saw that they were the only ones out from under the hill, and they saw Krishna was still there, because Krishna had to still stand there, because if he put down the hill, everyone would be crushed. He had to be the last one out. So they turned back and they saw that Krishna was still under the hill. And they quickly ran back and surrounded him. And immediately, Krishna drove them out again by glancing at them with the compassion of a friend. From all directions, the smooth-skinned, pleasant-looking herds of cows streamed out from the valley under Govardhan Hill. As they came up, they looked like the expanded hoods of Sheshanaga rising out of Patalalok, or a sheet of moonshine hiding in a cave out of the fear of darkness, or like matted locks of diffused light being born from the crystal mountain of Giriraj. Thus induced by Krishna's words, the cowherd men also gave up their fear, and they smiled cheerfully. And with great enthusiasm, they left the temporary village beneath Giriraj. The elated gopis cast veiled glances at Krishna as they walked out from the hill. The effulgent gopis seem like the rays of a brilliant light visible even in the daytime, or the dazzling rays emanating from a valuable jewel beneath the mountain, or the glowing light of the ruby atop the hood of a naga snake. Yes, by the way, I had received a note before that we should go until 10 o'clock instead of 9:30, and now it is 2 minutes past 10. But there's only one little bit to read, so you have all listened so attentively. After the coward boys left, Krishna set the hill down exactly in its previous location, and he tossed Giriraj off his hand, just like a child throwing a flower ball. Then Krishna met his friends for more pastimes of wandering in Vrindavan. And overwhelmed with ecstatic love, the residents of Vrindavan came forward to greet Krishna according to their individual relationships with him. Balaram's eyes poured forth tears, tears of love, and he warmly embraced Krishna. Mother Yasoda said, "Alas, alas, my son's body has been severely weakened from bearing such a heavy load," and using her lotus palm, Yashoda massaged Krishna's left arm and kissed that arm affectionately. Rohini, who had attained the summit of parental affection, offered aarti to Krishna and Balaram with an artistically designed jewel ghilam. With their hearts, which were the abodes of deep love for Krishna, the housewives of Vrindavan offered him their full blessings. Then they worshipped Krishna with yogurt, rice paddy, and fresh grass. The potent brahmanas and their attractive wives offered boons and words of praise. Sananda and the other elderly men, bound by the ropes of intense parental affection, they embraced the boys and smelled their heads. The beloved gopis and their associates, dyed in pure love and covered by shyness, also honored Krishna and Balaram. They worshipped them with their doe-eyed glances and their lotus faces blossoming with desires. While they embraced Krishna and Balaram within their minds, their lips shone attractively with sweet smiles. As the spring season is ornamented with the month of Chaitra and Vaishak, which are full of fragrant flowers, similarly demigods such as the Siddhas, the Vidyadharas, the Gandharvas, the Kimpurushas, they showered flowers in great delight while singing the glories of Krishna. The demigods prayed, "All glories to the son of Nanda Maharaj. All glories to the holy abode of Vrindavan, which abounds with blissful mellows. Oh Krishna, you are enriched by superb qualities. The pure taste of serving your lotus feet is the source of unlimited bliss in the hearts of realized souls. Your all-attractive transcendental body is concentrated liquid nectar. The moonlight of your nails, which shines like brilliant rubies, takes away all the miseries of your intimate associates. There is no limit to your fame. Oh, Sridhar, oh, sober one, oh, super excellent hero of Vrindavan, O Gopa, whose body is bluish, may you always be victorious. Anyone who once says, 'I am yours,' and from this day forward, I completely surrender unto you, is immediately delivered from material existence by your mercy." This is the last paragraph. I'll just read this little part again. "Anyone who once says, 'I am yours,' and from this day forward, I completely surrender unto you, is immediately delivered from material existence by your mercy. It is impossible for us to calculate how much you reward one who serves your enchanting lotus feet, which remove the miseries of repeated birth and death. O beloved of Gokul, you are served, worshipped, and glorified by pure devotees who are eternally liberated and full of knowledge. O Lord of the demigods, your transcendental behavior
astonishes the entire universe. We repeatedly offer our obeisances unto you. Sri Giriraj Govardhan ki jai, Sri Govardhana Dari ki jai, Sri Giriraj Govardhan Leela ki jai, Gaur Nitai Gaur Privanandi Yare.